Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Outspoken with White and Jordan. 100% engagement.
It's a total disrespect.
Download, stand well back, listen.
Jim White and Simon Jordan.
I don't see that view.
Outspoken with White and Jordan.
From the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
Thanks for listening to Outspoken with White and Jordan. I'm Jim White, and today myself and Simon discuss Everton's latest points deduction, but will it be the final nail for their Premier League survival hopes? Former politician and Toffees season ticket holder Derek Hatton joins us. Elsewhere, John Stiles, son of 1966 World Cup winner Nobby Stiles, joined us in studio to talk about a group he has set up, Football Families for Justice, to help ex-players and their families affected by dementia. And we speak to actor and West Ham fan Danny Dyer ahead of Soccer Aid for UNICEF 2024, taking place on Sunday the 9th of June. You're listening to Outspoken with White and Jordan. Everton got more bad news yesterday, Simon. They were ready for it. They were expecting it. Deducted two further points for a second breach of the Premier League's profit and sustainability rules. They've been docked 2 points for admitting breaking spending rules by £16.6 million for the three-year period up to June 2023. Yep. The latest punishment sees them drop to 16th in the table on 27 points. And now you kind of think survival. Will they be able to survive in the Premier League? Now, FFP expert Kieran Maguire, I know he's somebody you much respect, Simon. He cited a lack of consistency on the punishments being handed out, exactly like the one yesterday to Everton.
The Premier League initially wanted a 10-point deduction for Everton's first case when Everton were £19 million over the limit. They then wanted an 8-point deduction in respect of Nottingham Forest for going £34 million over the limit. And they wanted, I think it's 7-point deduction in this next case when Everton were £16 million over the limit. So you put those into any form of spreadsheet and you go, it's completely baffling. There's a lack of consistency. There's a lack of guidance, I think, coming from the Premier League itself as to what its members are expected to be able to do. And you can understand why Everton are so upset.
Is he right, Simon? A lack of consistency and a lack of guidance from the Premier League itself?
Well, look, what the Premier League's case is and what it presents and what the Independent Commission determine can be two different things. They're prosecuting on behalf of the other 19 member clubs on the basis of advancing a case, and it's up to the Independent Commission to determine how they want to sanction them. So I understand Kieran's argument about what there appears to be is a lack of consistency or transparency or a thought process that people can alight upon and say, well, I understand where they're coming from. Because, of course, they're suggesting 10 points for Everton breaching at 19 million and 8 points for Nottingham Forest breaching at 34. Now, of course, we also understand, because we've had people like Stefan Borson in here talking about mitigating circumstances in the approach, which I find a strange thing, quite frankly. Mitigation by being cooperative really shouldn't be a factor, because if you're defending yourself, being cooperative isn't necessarily part of your staple diet. You're there to be slightly adversarial and push back as robustly as you possibly can.
You've got to cooperate, haven't you?
Well, yeah. I don't know if you do. I don't think you do. I mean, people don't tend to cooperate.
You would.
Well, depends what... Look, if I'm defending myself, I'm going to defend myself in the most robust fashion. If someone's attacking me, irrespective if I'm a member of that organisation that's attacking me, I'm going to push back and be as... Not truculent, as belligerent as I can, but I'm going to be adversarial because I don't want what you're about to foist upon me. So I think there's a balancing act between the subjectivity of mitigation, and then you also got to look at the fact that Nottingham Forest and Everton. Everton, you know, didn't just breach by 19 million. They breached by 250 million and had a whole raft of allowable adjustments. And some of those allowable adjustments, all the other football clubs had as well. But I also think they were very forgiving about the loss of player values and the revenues that were potentially lost as a result of COVID and some of the dynamics of how that was calculated. But there is a challenge in my mind beginning to formulate around what we're doing to our league and what we're doing to the most investable, economically successful league, because it's only coming on top now. People have known these rules, and the only reason people are getting very aerated now is because point sanctions are coming in. If this had been budgeted in as a £20 million fine or a £30 million fine, they'd cry,
yeah,
but they wouldn't cry as hard, and there wouldn't be this shouting of foul from outside voices like Andy Burnham or Mark Carney or Derek Hatton, whoever wants to pop up and have their two penneth about how they think the football world's held together.
Yeah.
All of these clubs have been complicit in allowing this landscape to develop and not having any concern about it. They've all had the opportunity to put forward a motion saying, oh, by the way, don't really like the way financial fair play is formulated, a little bit too hit and miss. Why don't we get together and have a vote on it and change the constitution or the rules around it? And they have, none of them have done it. And now what's happening is the series of unintended consequences, or we don't like this is now sporting sanctions. Prior to that,
yeah,
not really much of a peep, was there?
No,
people
exactly
didn't like it. People
now
got fines, and now it's caught up with
yes
them.
Yes, and now Everton face the possibility of another points deduction next season,
yeah,
after the independent commission couldn't decide whether or not costs of £6.5 million related to a further breach
were offsetable.
Yeah. I mean, if you are an Everton fan, Simon, you are at the end of your tether. When does this end? I mean, and the fans, to a woman, to a man, are quite right to ask that.
Well, they are, because ultimately it's not their mistakes that are finding themselves into the consequence for their team, but This is the price on the ticket for football club ownership. There's jeopardy. People accept jeopardy. Well, they don't. They cry about it, but it's priced in terms of refereeing decisions, managerial bad mistakes, players make mistakes. So now we've got situations where owners are making mistakes.
Yeah.
And the ramifications of those are that football contains jeopardy. It's always contained jeopardy. There's a part of me, and I don't say this lightly, that says bad ownership, good ownership, the challenges of making bad decisions, financial landscapes, they are just the precinct of business and life and sport. And it happens on the field, so why would it not happen off it?
Yes.
You'd expect better. Mashiri is at the centre of this. And of course, there are other people around. I'm not going to give the late, great, very dear friend of mine, Bill Kenwright, a complete pass, because all those guys had voices. But the point is that the challenge for Everton fans is that the best thing that can happen to Everton to get is point deduction, because quite frankly, when they get points deduction, their team picks up performances. Mm. So they'll galvanise themselves and maybe they'll pull themselves out of this club. I still think Everton will avoid relegation.
You do? You've said that all along. Many will think it's a final nail for them.
No, in regards to
Premier League survival.
It's not. And when I hear observations from former Everton players like Andrews Townsend that seem to have forgotten they played for that football club, talking about the idea that there are, you know, they get a lift. If the only way you can stay in a division as Luton Town is other teams getting sanctioned for transgressions that you weren't victims of, you weren't part of this league, the sporting merit that other teams can complain of legitimately that Everton have gotten is not the same for Luton, because Luton weren't there.
Yeah.
Right? So,
to a degree, Andrews has got a point. From a player's perspective, from a fan's perspective, it makes a mockery of the league.
Well, it will also make a mockery of the league if the only way a promoted side can come up is if sporting sanctions are put on football teams. And it is becoming concerning that we get very bland accountants and lawyers determining the configuration of our football pyramid and our tables.
Exactly.
We don't want that. Like
don't
I said,
want
the,
that.
Said the other day, the last thing we want is a KC sitting in the dugout with a wig next to the manager determining decisions on the football field, because
that's what we'll
have next.
Former politician, Everton season ticket holder, I've known him a long time and he never disappoints when he joins us live. Derek Hatton joins Simon and myself live on the show this morning. Derek, good morning to you. Another 2-point deduction. Where are you now regards Everton's fight to survive in the Premier League?
Yeah, good morning to both of you.
Morning.
I don't know. I mean, I'm in a position at the moment where I'm just sick to death of the whole thing. I went on Saturday to watch Everton against Burnley. I've been watching Everton since I was 10 for 66 years. And probably that was the worst performance I've seen from an Everton team in 66 years. Now, that puts me in a position where I'm thinking we've got an awful lot to do. I'm also very conscious that we've got a major problem over ownership, that we still don't know what's happening there. The club is rudderless. We don't know where we're going. There's two people supposed to be buying it. There's a lot of money owed. And we've got a major, major stadium, which is fantastic, which is being built. I'm at the opinion at the moment where I'm thinking, hang on a minute, do we really need to have all this discussion and debate and time of people who should be spending their time doing other things, worrying about maybe getting a point back? Well, I'm sorry, we got 2 points deducted. I don't know. I think it's all about what we do on the pitch and how what we do about ownership. And I think we should, I'm saying to Everton, forget the appeal. We don't need to mess around with that. Let's just get on with it. We've got, what? We've got seven games left. We've got Sheffield United. We've got Luton. We've got Brentford. We've got teams that we've got games we can win. I'm sorry, if we don't win those games between now and the end of the season, we don't deserve to be in the Premiership. In the position now, let's concentrate on that. Forget about the appeal and let's get on with the things that are important.
Derek, you and I know the Premier League would come back at you and say, we're not corrupt. And the fact of the matter is simple. Everton broke the rules.
Fine, of course they broke the rules. And we could spend the next 20 minutes going through all the bits about what they... I mean, don't forget...
But then say to you, Derek, don't accuse us of being corrupt. We're not corrupt.
The Premier League wanted 17 points taken off us. 17. And then it was reduced and then reduced again. You know, they, for whatever reason, they are doing whatever they can. And I'm not going to say why they want to do it. One of the big reasons is they don't want an independent arbiter.
Derek, who are they? Let's get into context what you think the Premier League is. First of all, your football club was one of the big five that created the Premier League, right?
That's
so you were the intellectual capital behind it, and it's construct. So the current regulations and rules that have been amended and changes and distributions were all the intellectual brainchild of people like your football club. So your football club is a member of a league that is represented by central management under Richard Masters, that's had the ability to change the rules forever and a day and hasn't done it. So when you start throwing around nonsense like corruption on the basis of the Premier League advancing a case which an independent commission then adjudicates, I think you're going in the wrong direction. I think the incompetency of your ownership model is the area you should be irritated by.
It's say at worst corrupt, at best incompetent.
Yeah, but you're using corruption,
Derek. And I think it's probably somewhere in the middle of the two, to be honest. The reality is, I know Everton was part of it, but since then, a lot's changed. You know, we've still got this, they're far more concerned about the Super Six, and we all know that. We go through that all the time and all the arguments for it. We're still left in a position now. What does Everton do? And we can go through all, I don't know, last time, two times we've been on, we've gone through numbers and we've gone through percentages and everything else. It's almost got to the stage where we've gone beyond that now. It's what Everton do now, and I'm just of the opinion that what happens about ownership, what happens on the pitch, is far more important between now and the end of the season than worrying about whether or not we get 1 point. Because the problem is, if we go and appeal now, there'll be loads more conversations
but
on
Twitter. Derek, you're a multifaceted individual. Are you seriously suggesting that Sean Dyche, who's an island on his own right with the players, has any concerns about what's happening in the boardroom, really? So what you're suggesting, if I was Everton now, I understand your point, which is focus on the pitch.
What I do think, I agree with you about Sean Dyche, but what I do think is you've got players there who are very young, very rich, but still young players who actually don't know very much about Everton, and they must read and hear. And you're not going to tell me that they're not going to get affected by all
Derek,
the...
Have you actually worked with players on a daily basis and seen what players' mentality is? Players are focused on one thing, which is themselves, their opportunity and their outcomes. And that's the job of the manager. I think it would be stupid for Everton Football Club to roll the dice of and having a go at appeal and do it in isolation, because most people are capable of doing more than one thing at a time. So the football team focus on winning on the pitch, and the board of directors, insofar as there's a competent board of directors there, get on with trying to reduce the penalties that that are being put on the side. So they should be not mutually exclusive, but they should be a situation where the two things can be resolved. Your team will stay in the Premier League, Derek, because there are three worse sides.
The chaos that exists at Everton at the moment, I'm not sure that they are able to be multifaceted. I really don't think they can. They have got two major jobs at the moment. One is to stay in the Premier League, and two is to get the ownership sorted out. I'm sorry, they're not doing very well as either of those at the moment. Don't give them another headache. They can't cope.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
World's most dangerous download. Outspoken with White and Jordan. From the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
Simon, before we go any further, and I know you will immediately say, no, we're not. No, we're not, so forget it. Are we a step closer now to seeing Premier League games going stateside?
No.
I knew you would say that. FIFA and the US promoter, this company called Relevant Sports, have overnight reached an agreement to bring to an end their legal battle over a ban on European leagues staging official club matches in the US.
Yep.
Now, in 2018, Relevant Sports tried to organise a La Liga fixture to be played in Miami, Florida, between Barcelona and Girona. Off the back of that, FIFA said, no, rules are rules. Games can't be played outside a league's home territory.
Yep.
Forget it, we all move on. But Relevant Sports didn't forget it, and they took FIFA to court. And now, overnight last night, they've reached an agreement, which brings to an end their legal battle. And now there's a stronger than strong suggestion that FIFA will now change the rules. So there you go. From hearing that it'll never happen, it looks like it could well happen, and the door has been opened. And indeed, speaking on the Rich Eisen show, a show I have never seen, but a gentleman called Casey Wasserman,
yes,
and who is he? He, of course, is with the sports agency.
Intellectual capital behind the Olympic Games.
Absolutely. Mm. He said, you bet, English football is coming stateside.
Just like the NFL has done an incredible job of taking their games overseas, real games overseas, mm-hmm. I think you're going to start to see European professional football games played in the United States. It is the biggest sport in the world, and this is the biggest sports market in the world. And I think that is a big upside. I mean, look at what Messi playing for MLS is doing for MLS. It's stunning. But if you had a Manchester United-Chelsea match in New York, and you had a Real Madrid-Barcelona match in Miami, and you had those level of games in American cities like
that,
the NFL,
count.
They're real games.
Right.
That could be massive. And I think the other thing...
Is that going to happen?
I would be shocked if it didn't.
Is you can hear them. You can hear the tone of their voice. Games that count. That count, though.
Yeah.
They're going to come here. Now, I think FIFA have had a fright in this one, Simon, because obviously they said to Relevant back in 2018, Barcelona and Girona will not be coming to Miami, Florida, but thanks for your interest, goodbye. But Relevant didn't quit, and they threatened court action. Yeah. And now FIFA have buckled.
Well, look, they haven't buckled. They've had a judgment that's been determined against them. And I'm not entirely sure that that was a La Liga game between Barcelona and Girona. And I have no issue with games being played in America. But the argument that's being waged is about Premier League games. If you want to take, if you want to make a competition where European clubs can play in America, oh yeah, all day. That's, I love that.
No, but they're not. But they're not, and you know they're not.
No,
they're talking about a one-off Premier League game being played in Miami or being New York or LA.
But they can talk about what they want. The framework of the way that the current constituents parts have made football is that the domestic leagues and the home and away configuration, which is the premise, is the first. Okay, when we're building a league, what's the first thing? How many teams in it? How do they play? They play home and away. Okay, so competitive jeopardy comes part of it. So they seed that in the rules. So the domestic leagues have been built upon, and they're right to uphold those values. I couldn't give a monkey's what the NFL's doing. The NFL needs to be able to take its product around the world, because this is the country that tells you that their sports are the World Series when they compete amongst themselves. And they believe that the landscape of sports is a destination. If you scaled up what the Premier League is getting from its broadcast deals against the populations of America, we'd dwarf their broadcast deals. So I get a bit tired about what the Americans do and don't think. You know, that's why the Americans are spending so much time buying into British sports. Not so much the other way, because they see opportunity there. I have no problem with a tournament and a game of significance being played in America between Manchester United and Liverpool, Manchester United and Chelsea.
Big game, real games that count, as the Americans
say. And how you create that, but I do have a problem, and I'd see no necessity, zero benefit and zero reason behind taking a Premier League game and dropping it into America. Wasserman will be part of it because he's a sports agent. That's what he wants to do. That's how he makes his money.
It's maybe of no benefit to you, but it's of massive benefit to the Americans. That backdrop is the biggest of the lot.
So let me get this right.
We've got American owners here.
The Premier League, which is not just made up of American owners, there is a splattering of significant American owners in English football. Wes Edens in Aston Villa, Kroenke in Arsenal, Bowley in Chelsea, and obviously the Glazers in Manchester United. And you look at those ownership models, and the next fear factor you should have, if you're really worried about ownership models, is doing wondering when they're going to start influencing relegation, because they don't like any of that stuff, do they, in their sports in America. But the NFL running around the world needing to develop itself is because it's a game that's isolated specifically in North America, and they've run out of energy. And they've run out of opportunity, and they can't go any further with it. It's still very successful. And we had this debate with a fellow that came in the other day when I laughed about the constituent parts of how successful the NFL broadcast deals are. But the greatest growth that we've got in domestic broadcasting rights, or sorry, in football broadcasting rights, is overseas, of which America forms a part of it. So yes, of course, you've got to tip a nod to these marketplaces. But we're already getting eyes on the prize. We're already getting huge audiences.
It's the biggest
audiences.
Marketplace of the lot, isn't it?
Well, no, it's not. It's
one
of the
US.
Biggest. Well, not necessarily.
You've lived there.
Not necessarily.
We heard from Casey Wasserman
well,
there.
So
he
what?
Knows his
He's
onions.
An American. I mean, the Americans love to bang their own drums. You know, one of the biggest sporting audiences is in India or in China and in other parts of the world that have got more eyes on the prize. You know, I don't see there's a need for the Premier League to I'm going to use a word that I can't use that word. To change its product and play a game over in America to compromise the sporting integrity of the landscape of English football, which is working just fine. Now, if you want to create a different game, a tournament game, some form of derivative as a result of Premier League's playing in something meaningful, the FIFA World Club Championship can be played in New York City, by all means. Chelsea playing Manchester United in some qualification game for something that looks like it's valuable, absolutely. But I don't see, and I've never seen, the necessity. And no one's ever defined this 39th game. What the hell's the 39th game? But, there's 38 games in the league. What's the 39th game?
But did you see the need for six of our clubs here to say they want to join a European Super
yes.
League 3 years ago?
Okay, well, there's an easy answer to that question. What gives UEFA the God-given right to have a monopoly over European football?
Same argument with FIFA here. Same argument with FIFA here.
No.
Because they very casually said to relevant sports, go away. Barcelona and Girona will not be played in Miami, Florida. And we're telling you why.
Because
it's our rules
well,
now.
Because there was a set of rules.
That we own football.
There's a set of rules.
Relevant sports said, no, you don't.
There's
went to court.
A set of rules that football believes, in this instance, underpin the value of the structure of domestic leagues, home and away fixtures. They underpin the principal values of how football is held together domestically. Now, I understand the NFL has been able to build a formula, and there may be something to look at there, which is they can import their sides around into different parts of the world and they can still maintain their sporting integrity, or so they believe, right? This sporting integrity that has very little jeopardy attached to it because everybody gets distributed the same amount of money. Nobody gets relegated. The principles of American sports values mean bugger all to me. I don't look at the American...
That's not what we're talking about here.
But we are.
We're talking about a meaningful, or as they say, a real game that counts. So let's say, for the talking sake, Chelsea owned by Bolly against Arsenal owned by Kroenke in New York.
You're not talking about that.
English Premier League.
Talking about fulfilling a need in America. Why is it the Premier League's job to fulfill a need in America? We've got broadcast deals. We've got this most successful league. We haven't even got our engine started on how much more successful it can become. Why do we need to deconstruct something purely for the purpose of it? Because some self-serving opportunists in America see the opportunity to monetize a scenario through it. The Premier League doesn't need to play a domestic game.
But you backed A22, the company that was behind the European Super League, to break the monopoly of UEFA.
Different argument completely.
How is it?
No, I campaigned for the right for there to be a choice, right? And that UEFA aren't ultimately the only game.
And this is what relevant sports are doing.
So what is the advancement to English football, just out of curiosity, what's the argument that advances English football and the integrity of the sporting pyramid and the values that ultimately underpin community assets in this country? What is the value of shipping Manchester United and Liverpool to America for Manchester United and Liverpool fans that are presumably
you could answer your own question. What was the value in the Big Six playing a little schmooze game with the European Super League 3 years ago? What was the value of that?
Because ultimately, the problem with it was, insofar as value in the European Cup coming to Champions League.
What was the value behind it? Never mind the problem. What was the value?
I'll tell you what the value was in terms of challenging the autonomy or the authority and looking at things in a different way. Because you're creating a different landscape.
That's exactly what they're doing here.
No, they're not. They're taking it to America.
That's exactly what they're doing here.
You're compromising the sporting integrity of the sport.
I'm writing that down. Creating a different landscape.
No, you're
that's exactly what Chelsea against Newcastle in New York would be doing.
You're unpicking the sporting integrity of the sport. For what reason? When the Champions League, which was originally the European Cup, changed the Champions League for monetization reasons, and I argued with the fact that UEFA shouldn't be the only game in town. Now, you may have a point that FIFA shouldn't be lawmakers and have no challenge. Well, that's up to the individual federations. That's up to the FA. That's up to the German governing authorities, to the Spanish, to the Italians, to whatever, to say to the FIFA, we don't like your rules, right? So we're not going to vote you back into office, Infantino, unless you allow us to have freedom of trade to play our domestic leagues wherever you want them to play. This is not about... It's not the same argument. A22, which I don't have any particularly wedded relationship with, wanted to be able to challenge UEFA and say... And the only thing wrong with their argument was lack of meritocracy. You remove the meritocracy argument, you remove the fact that you get these clubs, you know, landing there because they were once great clubs and they close the door behind them and no one can ever join them. It was preposterous.
I'm looking at some of the messages. James, the Arsenal fan, because of the number of US owners here in the Premier League, this is bound to happen.
Why?
There's Mark. How about playing the Community Shield over there in the USA?
Well, that's a competitive game. So let's have
but
it
the
right.
Americans want
so
the, games
so
that count,
so the
they?
Same fans that genuinely believe, right, that they stopped the European Super League, that genuinely believe that they're the reasons why the independent regulator is becoming legislated for, are now going to say that it's inevitable that you're going to take my team so I can't watch and ship it across to America for no real perceived, for brand values.
Crunch games that count, say the Americans.
Stick the Community Shield there. Quite happy to have that.
Well, that's not a crunch game that counts in any shape
Why
or form,
not?
Is it?
It's a meaningful game, isn't it?
It's a curtain raiser.
Gets 90,000 people.
Give us a Premier League game, that counts.
What you do is, what I'm happy with is you create another tournament, because the money's in tournaments. What do you think? Why do you think the UEFA have gone Champions League, Europa League, Conference League? What are they going to do next? Social Club League next? The bottom line is that there's revenue in it. So I have no problem with a tournament that has meaning attached to it being played in America. None whatsoever. But why take a domestic fixture?
We'll see.
Because the NFL have done it.
Yeah. Well, FIFA told relevant sports, go away, we're not interested. But they had to be interested because it's shooting them to court and now they're having to talk about it. Great line from James. Can you imagine Klopp with a 12:30 kickoff in Vegas? Great one. I love it.
Danger. Flammable exchanges ahead. Outspoken with White and Jordan. From the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
Nobby Styles, Simon. I think of Nobby Styles. I think of the cheeky chappy with his shirt out in 1966, doing his little jig round the pitch at Wembley when England won the World Cup. And I was in Glasgow watching it then with my dad, Robbie, and I thought, wonderful. What an achievement. We will never forget that. Nobby Styles passed away at the age of 78 back in 2020 after an illness with prostate cancer and advanced dementia. And a number of Nobby's England 1966 World Cup winning teammates have died after suffering with dementia, including Sir Bobby Charlton, Jack Charlton, Ray Wilson, and Martin Peters. And only last June, I was at the funeral of Gordon McQueen, Scotland legend, of course, who died aged 70 with dementia. It's a story that never really goes away. Now, Nobby's son, John. We have spoken to John Styles on a number of occasions. John has set up a group, Football Families for Justice, FFJ, who are seeking to secure a properly financed fund to help ex-players who have been or are yet to be killed by CTE dementia. And as part of this, they're campaigning for financial provision to the widows of ex-players and want care home costs to be covered. John, we've often spoken to you on the phone. I'm delighted to say you stepped on a train, I presume, and have come down from Doncaster.
Yeah, picturesque Doncaster. So it's nice to be down here, and thank you very much for letting me come on to talk about this.
It's great for us to have you here. This is Mr. Simon Jordan. We're delighted you've joined us here in studio. The FFJ has the support, John, of people such as Paul Jewell, Peter Reid, Neil Ruddock, Kevin Ratcliffe, Jim Beglin, Gary Shaw, John Aldridge, Gary Birtles. Why have you started the group, and tell us about your intention?
Well, I had a support group called Football Families, where the families who were either going through what my family went through or had lost their loved one. And then I thought it might be an idea to get some of the players who haven't been through it to join in, and we made one group. Anyway, it's really kicked off. The families sometimes talk about what they're going through, and the players can see it. So we're writing to MPs, we're writing to the Premier League. We're doing everything we can to secure this fund because it's just not happening. And if I can just, I've got a letter here from one of the families, if I may read it out. It sort of encapsulates why we're doing what we're doing.
Yes, please do.
This is from Jane Nicol, the widow of Chris Nicol.
Chris Nicol, Aston Villa, I remember him, yes.
Yes, he died in February. Congratulations. Chris has died without the fund having to pay a penny. You gave us hope that the time he had left would be spent in a more pleasant environment than the dreary care home social services had him forced into. I'm sure his decline was partly due to the lack of stimulation and exercise there. Also, visits from family and friends were much less because of the distance. That was hard on him and hard on us. I am currently very, very angry that Chris died with absolutely no help from the fund. His last few months could have been made so much better for him and his family. If you had actually lived up to the promise, you failed him and should be ashamed. And this is not the end as far as we are concerned. We will be joining forces with a growing number of families who feel completely let down. Jane Nicol.
Wow. How did you feel when you received that letter, John?
Well, I'd been talking to the family right the way through. So she told me that she'd sent the letter to, that is actually sent to the PFA Brain Health Fund. So that was sent to them shortly after Chris died. So I'd been talking to them throughout, and I'd been obviously not going through it with them, but I knew exactly what was going on.
Yes, so you've received a copy of the letter, and that has such an impact in itself, hasn't it?
She's just talking from the heart about what had actually happened to her. And she's not on her own. The problem we've got here, Jim, is we've got families selling their homes to pay for care. And if I can just rewind a little bit, you mentioned dementia. I can be more specific than that. Dementia is a very broad term. When my dad died, he was told before he died he had vascular and Alzheimer's. When we donated his brain to Professor Willie Stewart, he had neither. His brain was riddled with CTE. That can only be caused by head impacts. The tau protein breaks off. If you keep heading the ball thousands of times, it gathers with other tau proteins, settles on the brain and destroys it. And I believe that's specifically what is killing all of these footballers. So
you believe football killed your dad?
I'm certain of it. Absolutely certain.
1966 World Cup winner, Nobby Styles.
Absolutely certain that my dad died from heading to football. At the end of my dad's life, he lost the ability to swallow. His brain wouldn't work anymore. And I believe he's far from on his own.
What were the last days of your dad's life like, John, when you reflect now?
Obviously, very sad, but he did go away peacefully. And it's difficult to talk about it, but this is why we're fighting, because the PFA have put £1 million fund in place that is an absolute sham. And that's what happened. That Chris Nicholl instance is only a couple of months ago. Nothing has changed since then. There's going to be more Chris Nicholls, because it's not happening. The players are not getting the help that they need. Just another stat for you.
Yeah.
I spoke to Willie Stewart about 3 weeks ago, and I said to him, out of all the brains that he'd examined, footballers' brains, what percentage had CTE? He said it was 70%. And that's from Willie Stewart, the leader in the field.
That's right. He's at Glasgow University, isn't he? He's up in Scotland.
Yes.
What conversations have you had with people like the PFA, with people like the FA? Where do these conversations go, John? Do they always end up in yourself being frustrated?
Well, when Dad died and Mehata Malango took over, I had a meeting with him and John Massino. And they said that the problem was that big, they were going to quantify it properly and appoint actuaries. That never happened. They did a cack-handed thing that they did on the internet, where if an ex-player, go on a QR code, answer these questions, blah, blah, blah. The PFA, even now, have no idea how many players have got dementia. The neurodegenerative department was started up in 2021, and even now, it's never been done properly, where they've actually sought out the players who have got dementia. So it's a massive problem.
Download, stand well back, listen. Outspoken with White and Jordan. From the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
Bit of a gear change, but we make no apology for it, because we're delighted to get behind Soccer Aid for UNICEF 2024. It's going to take place at Stamford Bridge in London on Sunday the 9th of June. It will be shown live and exclusively on ITV1, and it will be broadcast, I'm delighted to say, Simon, on Talk Sport. We shall have an England team, and we shall have a Soccer Aid World 11. I'm delighted to say, and I'm presuming this man is going to slot very nicely into the England team, as in when he's asked. Great actor Danny Dyer joins us live on the show this lunchtime. Danny, good afternoon.
How are you, boys? Good?
There we are. We've got you live on YouTube and Facebook. We can see you as well.
You got
as
me?
Hear you. We've got you,
Danny. I can't see you, though. I'm gutted.
Simon Jordan is sitting to my right, and he sends you his very best. In fact, you'll do that right now.
How is he? How's my old mate Simon? Is he all right, is he?
I'm all right. I'm dealing with my handkerchiefs in my pocket, because apparently I like a handkerchief, me.
Good. You're a handkerchief nut, and apparently something about Goldstein said you put lemon in your hair or something every day.
Goldstein's just a lemon full stop, so, you know, I don't get involved with those conversations.
So, Danny, how pleased are you to be involved in this Soccer Aid for UNICEF 2024?
Yeah, no, it's an amazing thing. I done it last year, and, to be part of something as big as this anyway, UNICEF, an amazing charity, what they do for people around the world, you know. It's such a beautiful thing, and to be asked to get involved in something like this and pretend to be a footballer for a few days with ex-pros and wonderful people, I mean, it's amazing. I'm 47 this year, grandfather of three, and, you know, and I'm running about with an England kit on with me derby hanging out, you know, pretending to be a footballer. So, you know, it's amazing. It's beautiful. It was a real experience last year, so they asked me back this year, and I jumped at the chance.
Brilliant. What did you learn from last year then, Danny?
I realised how old I was and how battered, and I'm not very good at running. It don't suit me. But I realise what a family it is, and what a team, you know, all these people that come together. And what I realise is that England ain't very good, and we've got to win it this year, because they've lost it 5 years on the spin. So, you know, we've got to nick it this year, surely, you know. But But it was an amazing... I'll tell you, pretty petrifying running out at Old Trafford, I'll tell you that now.
Now, Simon, did you not make an observation about the footballing ability of Danny Dyer some time ago?
Oh, I did, yeah. Yeah, and it was slightly unfair because I've seen worse players than Danny. I mean, I've had Nick Moran in footballing teams that I've played with. So it was a sweeping comment that I made laced with hyperbole. And I can't remember the actual context. It was probably stoked up by you, Jim. But I did say it, and Danny did bite back and say...
Yeah,
hey,
so it's always Jim in the middle, isn't it? You know? Well, yeah, no, yeah, I think you said I was worse than the geezer who's got no legs. What's his name?
Douglas Bader.
The old pilot, what was the name?
Douglas Bader.
That's it, Douglas Bader. That's it, yeah. So, you know, a bit strong, you know?
In fairness.
I'm not really claiming to be a good...
It was a bit strong. I mean, I stand by the observation that you are not the greatest footballer I've ever laid eyes upon, but that's not the point, is it? Because you don't claim to be. So contextually,
and
you denied the existence of ever playing in a team that I was involved in, which was a fib, Danny, because you played in the soccer sixes with me and Mark Avery.
Fair, yeah, but I think to be fair, back in the day, and
you
I
and
think
Tama.
One of the reasons why I was so bad is that I hadn't been abed. So, you know, I'm not encouraging anyone to stay up all night and that's right. And then to turn up and try and play football is a very, very dangerous thing to do. So how I got through it, I have no idea. But again, them sort of memories for me, you know, you've got a very good memory. You've obviously looked after your brain, Simon. You know, you eat well, you eat, you know, granola and all that in the morning. You know, I'm not known for, you know, looking after myself as such, and I've lived a life, mate, and I don't regret any of it. But now I've calmed down, I'm a calm human being, and a grandfather, like I said. So it's all about just trying to get through the process and try not to mug myself off too much. Listen, what I've learned about these things is get the ball, control it, and lay it off and give it to someone better. This is most of the people around me.
Quite right. Well, you've got a few decent ones around you. I mean, Jermaine Defoe's going to be playing for England. Jack Wilshere. You're up against people like Usain Bolt, Eden Hazard, Roberto Carlos. It's some gathering, isn't it, Danny?
It's unbelievable, mate, honestly. And you know what? It's a real celebration of UNICEF as well. And I say celebration in the sense of you do a little bit of training, you kick the ball about in the afternoon, and then you all hit the bar. And, you know, it was an amazing last year because I remember I was in the bar, Tommy Fury was sucking on a bottle of Disaronno, and Mo Farah was on the karaoke, and Usain Bolt was at the bar. And, you know, sort of looked around and thought, what an experience this is, to be fair. And interestingly, it's Robbie Keane that keeps everyone up all night. And then comes on and wins the game for him. Scores two absolute beautiful goals. So now I've learned, actually, stay away from Robbie Keane, I think, is the key.
Well, it's on Sunday the 9th of June at Stamford Bridge. It'll be live in TalkSport. It's exclusively
there's still
live
some tickets on sale. I know, I just want to say, Jim.
Yeah, where can you get tickets, Danny? I see they're available from Soccer Aid, the Soccer Aid website,
That's
which is good.
Go on the website, mate. There are still some tickets and not many left, so people should snap up the tickets and come down and watch us.
Now, Danny, before we let you go, West Ham 7th in the Premier League and still in Europe, of course. Are you with David Moyes? Are you against David Moyes? Where do you stand in it?
Well, it's a tricky one with Moyes, isn't it? I will say I've probably never been as unhappily happy as I am at the moment, in a sense of... you know, what we've done, I've been a West Ham supporter all my life, over 35 years I've been supporting them, so it's all been heartbreak for me, relegation, a complete underdog, you know, now we've gone up a level. I think what he's done for us is an incredible thing and gave us glory. Not many clubs win trophies, as we all know. It's just the elite lot. So the fact we've won a trophy, and it is a European trophy, some people are a bit snotty-nosed around it, but, you know, it's a good trophy to win. I just think, obviously, it's quite hard to watch with Moyes sometimes. That's why people moan. He likes to sit back. It's not very attractive. It's difficult to watch. But, you know, you can't deny what that man's brought to West Ham United. So, for me... at the moment, it's Moyes in. Unless we get smashed 7-0 by Leverkusen on Thursday, and then it's probably Moyes out.
But it's Moyes in for the time being. What about your son-in-law, Jared Bowen?
No, absolutely.
Yeah, Jared Bowen.
And listen, and also I will just say, he did scout Jared Bowen. He brought Jared to our club. So for that, I'll forever love the man. Do you know what I mean? And what a player he is, what a man he is. He's been incredible for us. He's picked up a slight knock, though, so we're hoping he'll be all right for Thursday. But he brought Jared to the club. So for that reason, you know, and who's now the father of my grandchildren, which is a beautiful thing. I've got to thank Moyes for that. What a legend.
Yeah, of course. And Danny, what about Jared?
I'm on here brassing my daughter off, you know.
What about Jared's chances of getting on the plane to Germany?
He's got to be on the plane. And I'll tell you something now. I know I might be slightly biased, but I think he's as good as Saka in that position. I think he's got all of his attributes. I think he's as strong as him, or he's stronger, for sure. You know, he's great with the ball. He can finish. And also, he can play anywhere up front, which I don't think Saka can. So, for me personally, I think it's a myth that Saka is better. I think Jared's decision-making on the field is unbelievable. Very rarely does he make a mistake, that man. And so, you can rely on him. He's a very reliable player. And one-on-one, there's no one better.
Well, I think Soccer Aid for UNICEF are going to rely on you when it comes to you man-marking Usain Bolt. We look forward to seeing that. Danny, thank you for your time, mate. Thanks for joining Simon and myself in TalkSport this lunchtime. Boys.
The world's most dangerous download. Outspoken with White and Jordan. From the world's biggest sports radio station, TalkSport.
Thanks for listening to Outspoken with White and Jordan. Please leave us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcast from. We're back tomorrow to bring you the best of the show.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.